As a small business owner, how many of you hate dealing with all of the tedious admin and paperwork? Don't worry, you're not alone. You need to set aside that frustration you're feeling because there's a more enlightened way to look at the situation. Let's look at it this way. If you're still managing to deal with your paperwork on your own by using a spreadsheet, then you're going to absolutely crush it when you start getting help from FreshBooks. You see, FreshBooks has created ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software for self-employed people who would rather spend their precious time building their businesses than dealing with mountains of paperwork. One thing I really love about FreshBooks is that you can send clean and professional-looking invoices in about 30 seconds. And with literally two clicks, you can set yourself up to receive payments online. We all like doing that. For your free 30-day unrestricted trial, just go to freshbooks.com/mytaughtyou and enter mytaughtyou in the how did you hear about us section. Okay, guys, I am back with part two of my maternity leave podcast. I don't know who I thought I was trying to record an almost 2 hour long podcast in the baby could come any day now stages of my pregnancy. So not quite at my due date, but very close. So appreciate you guys hanging with me for this long. So still thirsty, got my water, still winded. So thank you for understanding. So I'm going to get into these questions. And these questions are from my Instagram. Like I said, I archived that post, but I'm going to get right into it. One of the questions said, just black women as mentors. It seems hard to find, but I know they're out there. How have you connected with women who mentor and guide you along life's journey, professionally, personally, and spiritually? So there is no black woman guiding me along life's journey, if you will. This question makes me feel like many of us don't really understand how mentors play a role in our lives. They are not these guardian angels rescuing us from making mistakes and telling us every little thing to do. Sometimes it's someone that you know from a distance that's teaching you things by the way she lives her life or carries herself, or even men, you know. Sometimes it's a person that you can call when you're in a bind and you just really need to run a serious question by them. I consider many people mentors of mine, but we don't necessarily talk every day. I haven't given them a formal title, and I haven't necessarily asked them to be my mentor. A lot of things I glean, from their actions, and others I can call. I think we expect too much from people in terms of mentorship. So I know there's a lot of times where you feel like, maybe my life or my career isn't where it should be because I don't have a mentor. And it's not as, like, it's just not as formal as that. So I do think that if you should have somebody that you look up to and you respect professionally, that you can call and run things by. So, you know, say, I know a lot of times you'll have some conflict at work, and I know this because I have gotten a million more I hate my job emails, and maybe you just need someone who's in a higher, you know, maybe a higher department that you can pop into their office and say, hey, this happened. What do you think about this? Or maybe it's a friend who works in the same field, or maybe it's a professor that, you know, was your major that you can run things by. And so one of the major things that I feel about mentorship is that the people that I have mentored over the years, I typically have found them working. So meaning I've been out at something and I've seen some young person killing it and just connecting with that person and just basically saying, I see you. If there's any way that I can be a resource to you, please don't hesitate to contact me. And I say that often to people who I know maybe they need to ask a question, or, you know, they're doing well, but they need that extra boost. And I believe that for people who I think mentor me, they feel the same way about me. They see what I'm doing. They see the effort that I'm putting in, and they are offering up themselves to me for just advice or something like that. So if you look on my Instagram, I think on one of the maternity pictures that I posted, Lisa Price of Carol's Daughter wrote this sort of long comment about how she remembers the first time that I came out to meet her at one of her events in Atlanta. And, you know, they had just opened up a salon. I think it was the Mirror Salon. And I really just, you know, I think we've all championed Lisa Price as like a sort of hero in our community. And I really just, you know, I said to her, I know that I'm here for like this salon, but I just want to ask you one question if you don't mind. And she was like, shoot. And I was just wondering how she had managed to, in my opinion, sort of have it all. Like, she seemed to have a healthy, loving marriage. She had children. She had a career. She was traveling. And I just was like, how did you do this? And she gave me, you know, an answer. And sometimes that's what it is, you know, it's just being able to get in the room with someone that you admire and respect and ask a question. And as we continue to run into each other over the years, I've been to her office. One time we shared an Uber leaving a hair show. It takes time. But I don't say, oh, she's my mentor, you know, or anything like that. It's just like, I know I felt comfortable being able to ask her a question because I really sort of, I admired her life setup. You know, it was like, I didn't feel like she had to give anything up. You know, she didn't have to give up being a mother. She didn't have to give up being a wife. She didn't have to give up being a professional. And I just was like, just drop some game on me, please. And I've done the same thing with other mothers in the industry. There are a lot of fantastic mothers in the industry. Mahisha of Curls, Pam of Coils by Nature, Courtney of The Main Choice, Monique of Meal Organics, Rochelle of Allocate Naturals. There are a lot of women who I feel like are doing it, and I never hesitate to ask them those questions. So you can always ask someone to lunch or dinner, or you can see if you can stop by their office for 15 minutes for, you know, a brief informational interview. And when you're done, you can ask if they mind if you keep in touch with them. And so it doesn't have to be this like magic fairy godmother or anything like that. It can be just these sort of small collisions, if you will, with people where you get some game to help you along the way. So the next question is about the Mai Taught You retreat, which was a blast, by the way. I don't think I've talked about that on the podcast at all, but really had a fantastic time. I've never been to anything like this before in my life. Like, I planned a sort of event of my dreams, and I can definitely say like my dreams came true that weekend. So the question was, what are three things that stood out in the application submitted by last year's retreat guests? So something, I've talked about this in a podcast before. I think it was last year after I had read through probably 1,000 applications, is that a lot of us don't really know how to tell our story. We tell our story as we let our history, or we let what has happened to us in our lives dictate who we are, you know? So last year I read a lot of, you know, I am a divorced, you know, mother of three. And I'm like, I don't know that you, like, you don't have to, you know, a divorced woman, that is a circumstance in your life. That's not necessarily who you are. That's not necessarily who you want to, you know, come out the gate with. Not to me, but not to anybody. And so that was, I feel like we've gotten a little bit better with that this year, but I still see a lot of that. So some things that stand out for me, and there are other people who are reading these applications, are effort. So I think that a lot of people, the whole purpose of an application is for someone to get to know you better, but also if there are a limited amount of spots and a lot of people that want them. So how do you stand out and shine on an application when you know that someone has to read through a ton of them? Like, how do you make sure that you get yourself off of the page and into the hearts and minds of the person reading it? So effort typically will do that. Something that stands out, people who tell their story and tell it well. People that have accomplished something, but maybe need to be connected with a network that goes to the next level. And so some of the things that, you come across is people who will say essentially that their cup is empty. Like, I am an empty cup and I want to come be poured into. And the thing about it is, like, just imagine if we had a retreat full of maybe empty cups and only one person with a halfway full cup or a full cup. And let's just say that person's me, and I'm just got to go around and I've got to just pour out a couple drops into all these 100 empty cups. That's not the kind of retreat that we're looking for. We want to, you know, maybe your cup is half full, maybe your cup is full, but where every single person is able to pour and exchange and pour and exchange. And I think that's what made the event so wonderful this year, is that people understood what they had to offer, and they exchanged with each other so well. And so what makes me so happy about this experience is that we have a Facebook group. It's a private Facebook group for people who attended. And as we add people who will be coming in 2019, these women are still connecting. They're still getting together in their cities. They're meeting up. They're having conversations. They're picking each other up from the airport and they're going out together. And that was the whole purpose, is that putting you, syncing you up with your tribe, you know, of somebody who just has your back. And that's really what it was all about. And it was a fantastic time. So effort, a story well told, and knowing how to articulate what you have accomplished, because we all, I believe, have accomplished something. Okay. She says, how do you do your very best or put 100% into your work when you naturally have a nonchalant attitude or personality? And so I could just see, when I saw this question, I'm like, I could just see this smug look on her face. But I said, what does being nonchalant have to do with doing your very best? Nonchalant means appearing casually calm and relaxed. And it sounds to me like you believe that your lack of effort is a part of your personality versus being unmotivated, or dare I say, lazy. You know, my recommendation is to find work that excites you, and then you'll find yourself putting your all into it. You're not doing your best because you don't care. So do yourself a favor and do work that you care about. Okay. This one says, I'd love to hear more about how you calendar your life out. Your interview with Lovey had a glimpse of how you set time aside for things and set boundaries with your calendar, and I'd love to hear more. So for those of you who haven't had a chance to listen to Lovey's Rants and Randomness podcast, it is up, it is popping. I was her second guest, and I listened to it, and it always is crazy to listen to myself as a guest on someone else's podcast. And Lovey's just so, she's so awesome, and so I was so happy to do it. But I talked about how I live and die by my calendar. So I talked about how I schedule my days. I live my Monday through Friday strictly by a calendar. Everything I'm going to do for the day is on my calendar. Calls, meetings, errands, appointments, whatever it is that I'm doing for the day, it is scheduled. So the way my life works is that you reach out to me either via email or text, and let's just say you call. You will then be rerouted to an assistant who will schedule you for a call with an amount of time. So you will know how long we will be talking. And I think that that is very important, because a lot of times, you know, it doesn't mean that I don't have these sort of unstructured, loose, free conversations, but I don't do those during the week because my time is very, very important. And I'm literally, like I said, staying on a schedule. So you'll know if the call is 15 minutes or 30 minutes or 20 minutes and whatever it is, it's like knowing that you have to use the time efficiently. So you know how much time you have, everybody's informed. By keeping a solid calendar, I get more done each day and I have time to actually shut down at the end of the day. And that's what's really important to me, is that by keeping my schedule tight, when the day ends, I can be done. So most people don't get things done because they're poor planners. The days just come and go and nothing happens. Do you need to get your oil changed? Put it on the calendar. You want to go grocery shopping? Put it on the calendar. And I'm going to tell you what putting your grocery shopping on the calendar does. It will make you schedule a time that's maybe less congested, which gives you more what? Time. So if you're planning out your week and you're like, I'm going to do my grocery shopping. Let's just say maybe you go to work late on Wednesdays, or maybe you want to go on your lunch. It's like, I'm going to do my grocery shopping at a time that's conducive to my time. So going after work at 5 or 6 o'clock is probably not the best idea, but if you schedule it out, you have more time. So make appointments on your calendar. One of my favorite calendar apps, it's like, I'm a nerd. So if you use the calendar as much as I do, it's called Fantastical. And I don't know, I think it might be $30. So if you're not really ready, go ahead and do a Google Calendar or iCal. But if you have like a super intense calendar, Fantastical is a great app. But put everything in your calendar and live by your calendar. And it also will just help you think, you know, help you keep up with how much you accomplished during the week. A lot of times I'll be like, where was I, you know, or where was that meeting? Sometimes I'm like, oh my God, I went to this great restaurant for a meeting, but where was it? And I just refer to my calendar. So there we go. Now I want to take some time to address some of the letters in my inbox. The I hate my job letters are still never ending. And I feel like if I keep answering these, we'll be stuck on the topic forever. I'm hopeful that you'll use some of the resources I suggested. A lot of you are asking me to make a decision for your future, and that's just something I cannot do. Remember, a hard decision does not make it wrong. It just makes it hard, you know? So that's something my therapist taught me. It's like, just because the decision that you have to make is hard doesn't mean that the decision that you make it will be wrong, right? It must be done. And you also have to remember that not making a decision is still a decision. So I'm going to get into some inbox letters. She says, hey, Mylee, I've been a fan of yours for about 6 years. I've applied so much of your advice to my personal and professional career. One piece of advice that I may have applied a little too literally is the one about financial freedom, aka FU money. You suggested in one of your podcasts to take on another job at Target if needed in order to reach financial goals. I did just that, taking on a second job and working 7 days a week for the past 5+ years. By doing so, I was able to move out to a different city, live on my own without a roommate, get a car, which I just recently paid off a whole year early, pay off consumer debt, afford several medical procedures without the burden of bills, gift my loved ones on special occasions, start saving for retirement, and travel often, all without a single late payment or borrowing a penny from anyone. I'm proud of myself, and I just want you to know, girl, I am proud of you too. However, all of those accomplishments came at the cost of my social life. In a recent post, I think she's talking about on Instagram, you encouraged your followers to work hard and be willing to sacrifice a social life because a new one will come in a different form. She's paraphrasing. Well, I'm at the point where soon I'll no longer need or want a second job. And I really want to place a higher value on my relationships. I'm newly engaged and my family and I are very close. My issue is more with my friends. Because I was not able to attend events and spontaneously hang out, my friendships cooled. I tried rekindling a few, but found that we all outgrew each other. So now it's time for new girlfriends, but I'm struggling with that. I feel like I'm auditioning while not trying to mislead these girls into thinking I'm into them romantically. It just becomes awkward, which is in my normal demeanor, but without knowing me, it's just plain weird. Any advice on putting myself out there platonically? I'm really curious how you made so many strong connections once you moved to Atlanta without knowing anyone. Did you work and work friendships and work friendships just form overnight? I'm so confused. Thanks for reading. Sincerely, Sleepless in Friendsville. So cute. First, I want to say congratulations to you on all that you've made happen for yourself. I know the sacrifice was not easy. One of the first things I experienced when I put my head down was the loss of friends. When you hit that next level, you realize not all of your friends were intended to be around for a lifetime. When I moved to Atlanta, I had one friend, my friend Ken, and we weren't nearly as close as we'd become over the years. As inward as I like to consider myself, I've always been pretty good at making friends. During my first week in Atlanta, I spoke on a panel, and after the conference, I had a conversation with one of the young ladies who was volunteering. We exchanged numbers, told her to give me a call. I invited her over for brunch, I think, at my house, and we're still friends to this day. She's been on the podcast a few times. We talk about books. She's my friend, Tony. I also met another girl who was on the same panel that I spoke on. After we finished speaking, I asked her if she wanted to grab lunch together. There was a cafeteria. I knew she was going to be going to eat. She was by herself. And I just said, did you want to grab lunch together? From there, we talked and forged a relationship and we're still friends. Another one of my friends I made through an old coworker, her name is Ayana. She does the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. She suggested we connect via email, and I met up with her for drinks, and we've been friends ever since. So it's like, okay, good for you. You made all these friends. What the heck does this mean? So something that I've always done is hosted these sort of, I used to call them super friends weekends. I was notorious for making food. You guys know I love to cook, and buying a bunch of bottles of wine, two buck chuck, or making like sangria. And I would just invite, you know, 4 to 6 people over who maybe I had just only met them one time, but just was, you know, reached out. I met them somewhere and I'm like, hey, I'm having some friends over this weekend, or I'm having some friends over on Sunday. Would you like to come over for, you know, bites and sangria? And people rarely say no to that. And, you know, even if I only met them one time or I trusted them, I'd have about 3 or 4 people over for food and wine and we'd always have a good time. So sometimes you have to keep setting the stage until you form friendships that work for you. So I continuously set the stage to have people over and to just do fun things to connect, to keep up with the friendships. And I'm also a person who, I used to be better at it, but I always check in. So at the retreat, I did a keynote speech. What is wrong with me? I did a keynote speech during lunch, and, I told people that I never, even when I travel, I never go to a city and not make time to hook up with someone that I know lives in that city, you know? So if I go to Chicago, I'm definitely, you know, when I'm there, if I have time, I hit up Vaughn of Miss Vaughn TV from YouTube. I love Vaughn. And I had even visited her sister Michi when she was 6. So when I go through, you know, I'll holler at them. I also know the woman who owns Honey Baby Natural. She's in Chicago. So I go to New York. I visit my friend Lauren. Like, I'm always making sure that if I'm in a city and I have time, that I'm grabbing dinner with a friend, grabbing breakfast, getting coffee. And just, you have to make sure to have friends, you have to be a friend and you have to check on people. And when you see your friends doing fantastic things, you have to be there for them. Funny enough, I had started recording this podcast and a friend had called and interrupted this podcast to thank me because I had sent her some flowers because she called me last night to tell me some fantastic news. And so it's like, you want to be there for people, and it's sending her flowers doesn't mean that there's a romance or anything like that. It's just like, that's what friends do for each other. So you just have to reach out and see if people want to get together. That's how you get to know people. Go to some meetups with women in your community and just find a person that you gel with and see if they are a person that you want to continue a friendship with. So grab a drink, grab dinner. Hey girl, there's this new restaurant that just opened. Did you want to check it out together? People, they like doing those kinds of things. So those are my tips. Good luck. Okay. This next letter is a long one. So buckle up. Hey, my leak. So I'm going to start this message off by saying it may jump all over the place because there's so much that I'm confused about, but I promise you it leads up to one big question. Also, I really pray you get this message because I'm sure you've heard this before. In my mind, you're my life coach. Here it goes. 5 years ago, I caught a felony. I was in my senior year at Morgan State and was in phase one of my internship of student teaching. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the coursework of someone trying to become a teacher, but basically I only had one more phase of my internship to complete before obtaining my degree. Also, I had to have my background check done to even obtain the internship, so my security clearance was good. Unfortunately, that too was taken from me once I got my felony. I dropped out with only 6 weeks left in the semester and only one more to go until I had my degree. I was devastated. On top of that, I was fighting a case alone. I was depressed as hell. I was alone. Okay, let me back up. Originally, I'm from Petersburg, Virginia, but my mom and I moved to Maryland when I was 15. She got a job teaching in DC. My dad was never around. My mom took on a lot, as with any single parent. My mom and I had tension in our relationship, bad. When I was 13, I was quote unquote gay, or so I thought. It was just a phase. And that really put a strain on our relationship. During that time, she had disowned me. She was embarrassed that her only child was gay. I could go on for days as to the reasons for our failed mother-daughter relationships, but then I may never get to the question that I have made that I have met that I have that made me even write you in the first place. So when I say alone, it's because I didn't have family up here to go through the situation with me. And by situation, I mean my felony case. A lot of my friends weren't trustworthy at the time. Family thought something was wrong with me. See, the felony case is bigger than just a felony because I received it by stabbing my mother. All of my childhood pain came gushing through in an adult rage that led me to stab her. Do not worry, my mom is still alive and here with me. That entire situation took me through what one may experience during 50 years of life in a matter of 2 years. From that situation, I developed a very bad drinking problem. I was depressed. I caught 3 DUIs in a 2-year time span. I kept getting fired from every job I had. I wasn't making enough money to pay my bills. All of my friends were graduating and getting good paying jobs, and I just felt stuck. Okay, sorry, I'm jumping ahead again. After I got the felony and dropped out, I had to figure out a way to obtain a degree in something. I was an elementary education major. I had spoken to an advisor that let me know that I could change my major to family and consumer science. And that way, I would not have to lose too many credits. I did it. I had to take 2 years worth of classes in 1 year because financial aid was running out, and that was my last year for loans. I took 24 credits one semester, 6 in the winter, and 24 in the spring. I was finished in May 2014. I had a degree, but I couldn't really use it. Most careers on the family and consumer science track deal with families or children and require a background check to get done. That was my problem. I couldn't pass one. I made a note here that I just want to point out that I have the exact same degree. So trust me when I tell you there are plenty of things that you can do. My senior year, I had begun to dabble into makeup. I loved it. I love making women feel beautiful. And also, I like feeling like I was actually good at something and that I had a purpose. So when I couldn't get a decent paying job due to my background, I went that route. I applied at Mac. I got turned down the first time. I applied again, and the second time I interviewed, I got it. Still wasn't making enough though. I was fresh out of school, had a car note, lawyer fees, probation fees, rent, car insurance, and hell, I was 23 and I wanted to live. I had already been drinking heavy since my felony, but this is when the drinking picked up. I crashed my car and got my first DUI while working at Mac. I even got fired for being caught having a drink on my lunch break. So after Mac and totaling my car, my apartment in Baltimore became infested with rats. Yes, rats, my leak, not mice, effing rats. Baltimore is known for them. I didn't have money for a car. Oh yeah, had no insurance either and had $5,000 left to pay on it. And I needed to get the hell up out of my place. My high school friend's family moved me into their home to help, but they had an underlying agenda that I was unaware of. Things didn't last long with me staying there, and I eventually moved back with my family. I'm going to fast forward this a bit because I want to get to my point. I've done all of these things to trump adversity. I've gotten a therapist, and she's been my girl for about a year now. I have a good paying job now. My life is way less chaotic. I am off of probation for my felony. My mom and I are working on our relationship. She's about to get her first invite to join me for a therapy session. We'll see how this goes. I currently work in property management, and I ran into a friend last night that asked me if I was still doing makeup. I told them part-time, but not really much with my own brand because I switched fields to property management due to stability. Chasing your dreams is good, but I also need steady income to pay my bills and health benefits, you know? But I have a story, my league. I have a story that can help someone, and I don't know how to go about doing so. Money is cool. It's an important part of life, but my passion comes from helping people, whether that's helping them feel better about themselves by boosting their self-esteem, by slaying their makeup, or just sharing my story and letting them know that they too can overcome whatever the fuck it is in their way and do it. I also have a strong passion in helping mothers and daughters fix their relationship. I strongly feel, especially in the Black community, that there are a lot of problems within mother-daughter relationships that are not discussed. I agree. And they should be, so that mothers have a better understanding. I feel that I still have a lot of work within myself to do, of course, but here's my problem. I feel that I jumped into property management for stability and money. It's a life necessity, but happiness is also. I feel that I have a lot to offer the world, and that part of me may diminish by the corporate life, but I don't know where to start. I still have my makeup website where I produce content. I take appointments very sparingly. A part of me wants to just write a book about it all, but there's so much. I'm like, where do I start? Then a part of me feels like if I do write the book without a following or platform, will people even buy it? I think that's part of the reason why I'm holding on to makeup too, so that I can have some sort of platform to be known for my next move. I don't know, my leak. I have skills, a story, hustle, and talent, but just don't know how to use all of this in my favor. How do I make my life lessons, failures, and wins a thing/brand that evolves into financial stability? How do I know when I've arrived at that point in my life to do so? I've overcome so much. My track record proves I go hard for what I want, but it also shows how I let fear get in the way. I don't want to let my drive, hustle, and determination fall by the wayside with having a 9-to-5. Help my league. Help a sister out. Was that not a story, you guys? Okay, so a lot of times when people write me letters, if I'm just completely fascinated, which I was by this letter, I write back some follow-up questions. So I had some follow-up questions for her. I said, how old are you now? She says, I'm 26. I'll be 27 in July. I said, how long have you been doing the property management? She says, this is my first property management job. I will have been here 1 year in May. I'm a resident relations coordinator. I love money, period. So I like any field that makes money. Property management is very lucrative and I enjoy learning about the field. Back in October, we got a new property manager at my site and she's just been a bitch. She doesn't know how to manage. She's a micromanager and she's really banking on this location to get a promotion to regional manager. The property I am at was recently acquired by the company and it's the second largest in the company's portfolio. So it's a big deal to the company of who they have in place. I get it. The future of her career is on the line, but there's a certain style that people who have that manager trait go about getting things done and she just doesn't have it. She's made my job uncomfortable, but one monkey don't stop no show. So I put up with it. There are bills to be paid and goals to chop down. But this too is also what has made me consider all of what's in my mind right now. I have to create a life that I do not feel the need to run away from. And I feel that putting all of my eggs in one basket of a company and you really don't have a job security is more harm than good. But again, I'm 26. We're microwave thinkers and sometimes want things too instant. I get it. So I said, how would you describe your relationship that you and your mother have right now? My mom and I are in a much better space than we were during the stabbing situation. I actually just spent the weekend at her house while my Airbnb guests were at my house. I'll say this, we try, but we still have a long way to go. My mom kicked me out at 17, and she doesn't understand that a lot of my anger and hurt towards her came from me being alone during those crucial years. Hell, I had just finished high school. I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I knew I didn't want to be a failure or a statistic, so I had to do something. I'm angry because I had to do certain things that friends and others around me did not, and I felt it was her fault. On the flip side, she thought I was disrespectful, wild, and a hothead. But when you raise your daughter as your friend to compensate for being a drug addict, single, or just confused about life, that's what happens. So I'd say we're learning what one another likes and what's a turnoff. Learning how to love one another the way that person needs to be loved. You see, I'm a Leo. We need attention, praise, and sometimes can be a bit extra. And she's the total opposite. Quiet, reserved, and seems to be a little judgmental, but she won't claim that side. So we have to learn how to love each other or not get on each other's nerves too bad. It's a process, especially since she kicked me out at 17 and we didn't have the best relationship at the time as is. It's sort of like relearning a skill or something you once knew so well. It's the same but different elements and a different tune, if you get me. So I said, have you asked your therapist these questions that you've asked me? I've asked her more so about my makeup career rather than what I've asked you. I think for a while I was beating myself up for not using the talent that God gave me simply because I didn't think I was good enough. I had legit training and had knowledge that would get overlooked for what you consider an Instagram makeup artist, someone who has no real training but practice from YouTube and post bomb pictures on Instagram. So now they're a popping makeup artist but can't really do a face other than their own to save their life. And because of it, I didn't feel I was good enough. I also didn't have consistent clientele, and at a time, I was unhirable to anything outside of retail. So because I wasn't making steady money or getting booked constantly, I didn't feel I was good enough. Wait, is that even a question? Sorry, totally off topic. No, I haven't asked her the same questions I've asked you. So then I said, would you still want to do this work of helping people heal if you weren't getting paid for it? See, I'm not sure if I have the right thought in my head. I want people to heal by telling my story and letting them know that they can do it too. But I'm not seeking to become like a life coach or anything like that. I don't want people to follow in my footsteps per se because, well, Miley, I done fucked up. But I've also bounced back, and that's the part that I want people to understand. I don't want them to hold me on some high pedestal, even though I understand it comes with the territory and situations as such, but I don't want my story to go away with me and not have told it in an effective way to help others. Am I making sense? You making sense, girl. So my final question I asked her was, what's so wrong with stability and money? There's absolutely nothing wrong with money or stability whatsoever, but there is something wrong when you feel forced or you are unhappy while obtaining the stability and money. But then too, nothing lasts forever, right? I get that I have to grind to create the life I want, but do I put years into helping a company become better without making sure I have something for myself in the long run? Thank you so much for hearing me out. You made my night. So I'm gonna start off by saying this. There is something absolutely magical about you. I have the attention span of a gnat, and you kept my complete attention throughout this entire exchange. If you started a blog or wrote down your story or maybe even had a podcast series laying this out correctly, I'd likely be tuned in. You're honest, witty, hilarious, and have an infectious appeal. You definitely have something. I don't think your job will interfere with you telling your story, but I also think you should give it some more time to see how this thing, your story, continues to take shape. You're still in the middle of this good-ass book that I can't wait to read. Keep working and keep doing the work with your therapist. You can start to work with a ghostwriter or maybe start taking some writing classes online to learn how to lay out your story. You can start spending some time with the youth that may be in the same boat that you were in when you were 13 and in your gay phase, or 17 being asked to leave the house right after you graduated. I'm with you. You have a gift and something to share, but I don't know what that thing will be either. I used to feel the same way when I was younger. I knew I had something to share, but didn't know how to get it out. So I tweeted, and then I Instagrammed, and then I started a podcast, and I just never stopped talking, and I never stopped sharing. So find your outlet that makes you most comfortable and twist the top off. You may not have a huge following to start. I've said this a million times. When I started this podcast, I used to get 20 listens a week, and now I'm in the millions. But you're going to start feeling better with each release. Some may catch on, you never know, but keep working and keep growing, and it's all going to come to you in due time. So you are just 26. I think I started podcasting at 31 or two. I'm 38 now. So it's still early. Collect your check. I love your attitude. Like, I love your attitude, because I feel like you are so accountable for like who you are and what you do. And that is a trait that is insanely admirable. Like, I think that's just what, like, I'm with you. Like, I feel like you my girl. I'm like, you have owned up to every single thing that you have done. And I think that is why you are going to, like, you have changed. You will continue to change. You will be rewarded, because you're not trying to put your shit onto other people. And that is what some people do. I had somebody write me recently who tried to do that. And it's just like, until you become accountable for the things that you do, nothing's going to change. And I have so much respect for you. I have so much respect for you, because I just think you're awesome. And I think that other people will think you're awesome too. And I just think that however you share and whenever you decide to share, like I said, if you were able to hold my attention, you will be able to hold a lot more people. You'll be able to hold the attention of a lot more people. So keep going, keep growing, and please don't hesitate to keep writing me. I'd love to know how you continue to progress and keep making your money. If the job, you don't hate the job. I mean, that's the thing about working with others, is you're not going to always love everybody that you work with, but that's just the wonderful challenge. And you have the right mindset to see past all of that. So I'm excited to see what happens with you and for you. And please do keep me posted. So this is my last question, you guys. I can't believe I made it another 40 minutes. My mouth is dry and I do need to go to the restroom, but we're going to finish up. Letter says, you do so much for us, your listeners, followers, and distant mentees. I was wondering what we can do for you once you give birth. What boundaries should we be aware of? How can we respect your space on social and beyond? You give so much to us personally. I can go on and on about how your podcast and watching your excellence via social media has transformed my life. So I thought it'd be important to find out the best way we can support you during this next adventure in your life, whether it be through respecting your boundaries or anything else you'd like us to be aware of. So I got this question several weeks ago and found it to be insanely thoughtful and incredibly interesting. I think about these things, but no one has ever actually asked me these things. So since you asked, here is my list. Number one, something you should know about me is that I'm not a big secrets person. So anything that I haven't told you isn't a secret. It's just not something for public consumption. I haven't shared my exact due date with people that aren't close to me, because I personally can't stand the "is the baby here yet" texts and questions that I've somehow managed to not even be able to avoid. If I don't share my location, it's because I don't want you to know where I am. And I think that's fair. In the age of sharing, I think we believe we deserve to know everything about a person, when the truth is that the only thing we deserve is what the person chooses to share. Number two, just as soon as I am comfortable, I will share this baby with my social family. I always like to remind people that I have an entire real and whole life outside of social, and it would be remiss of me to share a special moment like this with my Insta friends before I shared it with the actual people in my life that have been holding me down forever and a day. So once I've made my rounds in my real life, I can come and share it in the social world, and that typically just applies to just about everything. Gotta tell the real folks first, and then I can tell everyone else. Other boundary is I typically delete any and all parenting advice from my pages. I don't mind recommendations or suggestions, books, various items and products, but when you launch into telling me what to do, how I'm going to feel, and so on, I delete it because I don't think it's fair. One thing I've learned on this journey is that while many women may lack confidence in other areas of their life, damn near all of you believe you have the keys to this parenting thing down. I've yet to meet a non-expert mom. I have some friends that admit to being clueless as hell, and I appreciate them. But for the most part, moms can be know-it-alls. And I want the opportunity to discover my own feelings in my own way. And I promise not to impart my views onto others. I'll share my journey as it relates to me, but I will in no way tell you what to do and what you're going to feel as a parent. You don't deserve that, and neither do I. So that is it for me. Since I'm in the baby could come any day now stage of my pregnancy, I may have already had this kid by the time you listen to this. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for listening. And I can't wait to get back on here and tell you all about this next chapter and keep answering your questions. If you'd like to email me in the meantime, while I'm up in the middle of the night, I'll be checking my email, checking my tweets, checking the gram. You can always drop me a line at mytaughtyou@gmail.com. Thanks, guys.